What a beautiful meditation. I was just so into it. And now, I was thinking this morning about Agni Yoga and how Agni Yoga reminds us to study the lives of heroes. And I've oftentimes wondered why. And I think I finally decided, I had to pick out a hero. And I've decided that my hero is Agni Yoga. Rather than having a human hero, which we have plenty of, you know, on the spiritual path, I just had this discovery today. Isn't that interesting that Agni Yoga is my hero? So I'm just sharing that. So the path of Agni Yoga, we're going to talk this morning about Agni Yoga and what it has to say about perfection and leadership and discipleship. So it's going to be kind of a potpourri of, you know, information. So the path of Agni Yoga is intended to bring fundamental changes to our lives as we, with sincere and deep intention, focus on making fundamental changes. For Agni Yoga is a path that provides for the growth of our soul, the growth of our spirit. It is a path that proceeds, this is interesting to think about now, it's a path that proceeds through the gates of service. Now, this is what the new world is about. It is not about the old world. The old world was Piscean Age. The old world was about devotees. That's what Pisces seemed to be about, is to find a hero, the source of a spiritual teacher that we were a devotee to. I remember as a devotee where I would sit on the floor, and the teacher I was studying with at the time was on a chair, but not just sitting in a chair, a normal chair, it was a peacock chair. And on top of that, it was on a elevated platform. So that made the teacher higher than high and the devotees lower than lower. I was never comfortable with it, but being the dutiful devotee that I was, I remained in that way until another teacher came along and said, get rid of the pillows on the floor, get those chairs out, sit on a chair, get the podium down, get rid of the peacock chair, and just sit like a normal human being. So that was my first hero. That teacher was my first hero that led me into the path of Agni Yoga. And now I'm ready for growth. Now I understand the power of service. I understand if we're going to be servants of the new world, servants mean we serve. We serve the needs of others. But we can't serve the needs of others until we have ourselves together. When we are together, we no longer have a broken wing, so to speak. And that wing is part of the other wing, which is part of the whole body. And it is part of the fiery worlds. Now we can serve the great ones. And that's what it means. The great service is serving the great ones. So let me begin with a few quotes from Agni Yoga that confirms about the gates of service, also about discipleship and leadership. An Agni Yogi or an Agni Yoga student is a server, and in their service, they are recognized as a new era or a new world leader. They are servers of what? The common good, which is the highest form of love, because such service is devoid of selfhood, of self-indulgence. And this is true leadership. So until we put ourselves back together again, see, we can't be devoid of selfhood, and we haven't yet removed self-indulgence from our personality yet, because we're still trying to put all the pieces together to be whole. And in that wholeness is when now we are open and receptive to the beauties of the teaching. It really is a magnificent way to understand what it means to be on the path and to be a student of Agni Yoga. So here's Master M. This is a quote I've said several times, actually, where he says, like elephants crossing the forest, crushing the bushes and sweeping aside the trees, so walk in the great service. But Master M also mentioned the path of great patience. Mm-hmm. What is the path of great patience? Why is Master M merging these two paths, service and patience, into one path? Well, to me, it makes total sense when realizing that by practicing patience, we are shielding ourselves from irritation. Think about this. Next time you get irritated, what's the cause of irritation? What's the replacement? Is patience. It's like a miracle. It works so well. Patience cuts 90% of the source of irritation. Patience is the ability to draw ourselves into the domain of the future and into infinity. In traveling this path, we give ourselves time and patience so that our sanity starts to work instead of opinion and expectation and rushing. And it gives a little time to our inner guidance to help connect us with what our path of service is. It takes patience and time to hear and to respond. In the practice of patience, we withdraw ourselves away from turmoil, problems, agitation, and interests based on separative viewpoints. You know, I think this is why people love this area that we live in here in Arizona. It's called the high country, because we live in a forest and we have so many hiking trails. People love to hike, and I think this is why. It takes them away from turmoil, away from problems, away from agitation, and away from separative points of view. We just blend ourselves with nature. This means that we can then observe life from the viewpoint of infinity. If you've ever been out in California around the San Francisco area, there's the Muir Woods. These woods are, trees are hundreds of years old. If you walk through this forest of infinity, it is so magnificent, it's so beautiful. You lose your sense of selfhood and merge with nature. It's really remarkable. Ultimately, patience is a sense in which our physical body, emotions, and thoughts are totally integrated and aligned with the vision of our higher self. On a spiral, our soul, our unfolding human soul, is aligned with the plan and then the divine purpose. And that's the vision of our higher self. Those who are not ready for the coming new world do not have the patience to learn, to discipline, to create, to serve, even to keep silence, to give enough time for the seeds to sprout. The great ones, this is interesting, the great ones avoid people who have no patience because they believe, these great masters of hierarchy believe, that impatient people do not allow things to come to completion, and they neglect the law of cycles. Isn't that interesting? If you think about it, and one of the examples I saw and have observed in the earlier years of establishing White Mountain Educational Organization, I began seeing other little groups, you know, come into existence about the same time that we did. And then I began to see those little existing groups disappear. I could never figure it out. And talking about the law of cycles, well, I began to realize that 10 years seemed to be a cutoff point for some of those existing little groups. And then they were gone. And I always worried about what's going to happen to us when we're 10 years old. Are we going to exist? Well, we're going to be 40 years old in October. Imagine that, 40 years ago, we established ourselves. Patience. We had the patience to give the group time, to the seeds of the group time to sprout. And those seeds were not only the people growing into the vision of their higher self, but also the purpose of the group takes time to develop. The path of patience, then, is concentrated expectancy and the root of persistence. Concentrated expectancy and the root of persistence. What does it mean to walk in great service? That means our life path is to be in service to the Lord. And to do so, we must be in contact with the creative source, the way of the mighty hierarchy. We are serving, in other words, just like hierarchy, the souls of humanity, the soul of your husband, the soul of your children and grandchildren, the soul of your pets, the soul of humanity. There are no boundaries to this kind of service, for it is in service to the Lord, the great hierarch. M.M. says, therefore, only a full understanding of great service can give disciples the aspiration to the hierarchy. He says, when the creativeness of the Spirit can encompass great service, then all paths to us are open. Service has a regenerative effect on our human nature. It not only organizes our life, but it also represents our physical body. It strengthens our inner system. It vitalizes our emotional nature, and it kindles our intellectual or mental nature. Service, we are told now in the teachings, which they're great with pointing out certain levels of awareness and activity or action, and service is no different. So one level of service is that we do something very constructive to meet a need, and then we are rewarded, and we look for that reward. Another level is that our presence and our example make people become more noble and honest and inspire their striving. That would be the second level of service. The third level is when we try to help people meet their spiritual needs without any expectation. And then the fourth level, which of course is the most refined level, is to help people while they reject you, slander you, or show many other signs of ingratitude. Interestingly enough, the teaching says that this fourth level is where true service starts. Psychic, and why is it? Psychic energy begins to develop in the Agni Yoga student when they reach this fourth stage of service, because this is when you need it. Psychic energy grows when there is resistance. Isn't that interesting? There's a formula. Psychic energy grows when there is resistance. When you strive to increase certain virtues and principles, even while others resist you with opposing forces, psychic energy wells up within you as you intelligently persist in expanding your virtues, the virtues and principles, such as beauty and freedom and unity and synthesis. Now, here's something a bit mysterious from the teaching. And I've talked about this in the past, and this is called the game of abandonment. It is where our teacher suddenly leaves their friends and their students on their own to such a degree that the students and friends will feel left out, neglected, or abandoned. At this point, psychic energy begins to regenerate in those who were abandoned. If you've had this experience and didn't understand it, maybe this will help you a little bit. But, and the point is that psychic energy begins to regenerate, and there's so much experience that you can talk about in this regard of how psychic energy begins to regenerate you if you are one of those abandoned ones. This is which I can tell you this much, this is where creativity begins. True creativity begins. But only if the abandoned ones take their situation in the right way and begin to stand on their own feet. See, the pillows were thrown away, right? The peacock chair was destroyed, and we were all sitting together on the same level. After they stand on their own feet, while holding deep gratitude to their teacher, now is when that teacher meets them on a higher level where they can teach them the method of subjective service through the means of inner telepathic and intuitive communication. So abandonment is a dangerous bridge. Some cross over while others fall into the river of life and they perish. That means they've left the path. They return to mass behavior, the behavior of mass consciousness. This method reveals that the innermost layers of people exposes their motives. Some of them live in the light of gratitude and are ready for any call of service by the teacher, while others develop remorse, hatred, jealousy against the teacher, and fall from the bridge. They fall from the teaching. Those who are abandoned but stand firmly on their feet with deep gratitude to their teacher may pass through many tests of doubt. If they surmount these tests, the teacher can come closer in closer contact with their souls. and teach them the supreme path of enlightenment and service. The supreme path is called All That Exists Is Within Us. The supreme path. As this path penetrates deeper into our consciousness, we slowly feel that all initiations, teachings, achievements, and services are found within our true self. That all is available to us if we tune in with that self. As we stay busy building bridges in our service, we will slowly realize that the labor of building the bridges toward the summit of higher dimensions is actually taking place within ourselves. A time eventually comes when we are united with the hierarchy and begin to walk in great service, where all paths to them, to the great ones, are open. This is why Agni Yoga is my hero. When I look at and read this statement, a time eventually comes when we are united with the hierarchy. There's so much in that to think about when you, and this is why I guess I love to study about the original members of the Rourke, what became the Agni Yoga Society, but started with individuals that were just drawn to Nicholas and Helena Rourke, who were responding to the call of hierarchy. And as those that finally defined themselves through commitment and love of this great service, this path of great service, they had to develop the great patience to develop themselves to become harmonized with the vision that was given to the Rourkes who were part of hierarchy. Isn't that interesting? Our hero. So you must have a common service project, a project that is a magnet that will magnetize the elements and create stabilization, creativity, and sensitivity in people and lead them to the purpose of life. In this case, the magnet is a common service project, which means we are giving ourselves to something greater than ourselves. So we must have a service project to create, our pine trees are blossoming with pollen. So we must have a service project to create right relations in the world. For example, musicians. Musicians must compose their music. Legislators must create laws. Politicians must wisely use politics in such a way that they bring humanity to understand right human relations. First, we must have a service project. Then we use our service to lead people to the ultimate purpose. Not only the purpose of their life, but the revelation of inner divinity. Like elephants crossing the forest, crushing the bushes, and sweeping aside the trees, we are going to walk in the great service to the Lord. Everyone can create their own keynote as an individual service project to integrate their whole personality. For example, when an athlete says that he wants to win a gold medal at the Olympics, to some degree, he puts a project in front of him. Because of that project, he eats well. He exercises well. He creates a better emotional, mental, and spiritual environment to meet the demands of that project. When we have a service project, everything within us slowly and naturally coordinates and cooperates to make the person achieve the project. From the simplest to the most complex project, it is the same process. You are going to have a service project. For example, the leader of a nation will gather their advisors and ask, "What role shall we play in the world so that humanity achieves peace and harmony and prosperity?" You can have projects for yourself individually, as well as work within the group. To dedicate yourself increasingly to those projects will create integration within you, if you allow it to happen. Integration in a group comes only when there is a service project toward which everyone dedicates and sacrifices themselves. By doing this, integration comes into being automatically and naturally. So integration is the flower of right relations within yourself, within your group, your master and hierarchy. In this integration process, there will be found men and women of vanity and ego, of my interest, of your interest, of my revenge, of your revenge, hurt feelings and memories. With such orchestration, nothing great can be accomplished. It's going to fail. At least this has been my experience. You can put three people on a committee and then listen to what they're discussing. My dear mentor and teacher would sometimes put the most obnoxious people together in a committee so that they could learn how to integrate with each other. Two of them can be sane while the third one is a real troublemaker. He would call them a monkey. The monkey, he said, will agitate the other two to death. The monkey teaches them how to control the monkey. If in all fields of human endeavor, leaders, the new disciples, direct the interests of their people toward the unity of mankind and towards synthesis, we will be able to respond to the energy of the great server, the cosmic ray of the hierarch, and make a real breakthrough into the new world. The Great One says, therefore, only a full understanding of great service can give disciples the aspiration to the hierarchy, when the creativeness of the spirit can encompass the great service, then he says, MM says, then all paths to us are open. Near the end of the 1920s, Nicholas Roark sent Francis Grant on a prolonged trip to Latin American countries. Now, Francis Grant was one of the early members and became an officer of the board of the Nicholas Roark Museum and the Agni Yoga Society. Her task was to organize exhibitions of Nicholas Roark's paintings there and to make the preliminary preparations for promotion to the Roark Pact and Banner of Peace. The first such trip took place in 1929, the second one in 1930. On March 21st, 1929, the newspapers in New York declared that the vice president of the Roark Museum, Francis Grant, following in President Hoover's footsteps, was going to visit a number of Latin American countries. This was March 21st, 1929. Was going to visit a number of Latin American countries. Her purpose as a representative of the museum in New York was to help the Pan-American Friendship by establishing contacts with museums, educational organizations, and libraries. According to the newspapers, Frances was given this mission by Nicholas Rourke, with whom she had recently visited in India. This was the beginning of the Peace Through Culture movement, the movement for the Rourke Pact and Banner of Peace. In October 21st, 1934, President Roosevelt directed Henry Wallace to sign the Rourke Peace, the Rourke Pact, as a representative of the USA. Essentially, the Rourke Pact helps to preserve spiritual health of nations by protecting treasures of the human genius. The Rourke Pact and Banner of Peace was signed April 15, 1935, by the United States and 20 Latin American countries, 21 in all. But later, other countries also signed and agreed to the Rourke Pact and Banner of Peace. There were approximately 14 members of the committee, plus four chairman people, as well as a handful of vice chairpersons from other countries besides the U.S. They had to integrate themselves and cooperate with, it's like another United Nations. This is discipleship. It is leadership. It is self-perfection. Well, most of us will not have the opportunity to serve in such a grand manner, but even giving a bottle of water to a thirsty person is a start. The universal consciousness is not going to waste time playing games with us, because the universal consciousness is based on the law of economy. We do not have an unlimited time to do things. The time is now. Work on yourself now. Work on self-perfection. This is a discipleship that leads to self-perfection. Remember that your body must be born in 9 months. A few months too late or too early, you are born dead. Similarly, you are a baby in the womb of God. If your time comes and you are not ready, you are aborted. So we have a lot to do. If we waste time, if we are violating the law of economy, human beings are part of the planetary machine. If the parts of the machine fail, the whole machine will fail. So self-perfection has a foundation. The foundation is that life is given to us, and it is our duty to strive to our utmost. Someone asks, if I have worldly problems, now how can I concentrate my mind on discipleship? Well, someone recently asked me this question. It is difficult, there's no doubt about that. But if you are a human being with two sides, one is the higher self, which is able to detach from the problems. The other is the personality, which attaches to the problems. If you can handle the problems without attachment, without involvement, without being sucked in and identifying with the problem, now you are acting like a disciple. If you are sucked in, if you are caught in the web of the problem, you're going to lose your discipleship because you have become the problem itself. Ego encourages personality weakness. Isn't that interesting? Ego encourages personality weakness. It moves us away from the process of self-perfection. When the ego is gone and the personality's commander, the ego, has now vanished or been vanquished, it is the higher self now that is enlightening us. The higher self can now advise us to act according to the higher inspiration that is given to us. And we become fearless, because to have ego means to have fear. Not to have ego means to be fearless. The substance of ego is built by fear. Once the ego is broken, there is no longer any fear. Because you are fearless, you destroy or you build. You construct, you destruct, you destruct, you construct. Because you are fearless, you can destroy or build. Because your essence is fearless, you are going to be successful. Some people think that they can work on their own ego to destroy it, but they would be wrong. If you have spent untold incarnations building your ego, now that you've decided, okay, I'm ready to destroy it, you are helpless before it. You are helpless. We are helpless before this many lifetimes of building the ego. See, the construction. So destruction must now take place. You must have a teacher, because the whole chain of creation, from the atom to the solar logos, is a continuous linking of teacher to student, student to teacher, and so on. So those who think that they can progress without a teacher, progress towards self-perfection without a teacher, are in delusion, self-delusion. They eventually come to a dead end and find they have wasted their time. Such thinking, such practices will lead us to self-perfection, discipleship, and leadership. There are so many disciplines found throughout the books of Agni Yoga that will direct you through the gates of great patience and great service. So that's it. It's why Agni Yoga is my hero.